Huh.
Watching Kyle's unboxing videos again?
Yeah, he always finds the coolest... No way! A robot dog? Gotta ask where he got it.
Or use your Samsung Galaxy S24 Ultra. Just draw a circle around the dog on your screen, and it shows you where to buy it right in the app.
Oh, I just learned a new trick. And that for once, I beat Kyle to the next big thing.
Circle it, find it with the new Galaxy S24 Ultra and circle the search with Google. Get yours now at Samsung.com. Internet connection required. Results may vary based on visuals.
Let's go live!
Live!
We'll do it live!
From the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
You said you wanted to meet me in private? You got it.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
You can't win in this league consistently unless you have a first-rate quarterback.
New England should 100% pick whoever they feel is the best quarterback available.
Earlier on the show, ESPN NFL draft analyst Matt Miller. Coming up, senior writer for the MMQB, Albert Breer, comedian Alex Edelman. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number two of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. Matt Miller, we just hung up with him, or hit end on the Zoom, right?
End meeting.
We ended meeting with him.
Leave me.
His mock draft meeting. Has four quarterbacks going at the top of the
I tried to tell you
NFL
guys
draft.
Like a month ago.
I don't know. I don't know. I still don't know. I still do not know.
I still would be pretty shocked if that happens, right? Because Arizona trades out.
Well, if Arizona, let's say Arizona keeps, let's say Arizona stays fourth overall, right? Then what? Then people will be trying to hop up to the Chargers,
right?
To make sure that the Giants just don't get J.J. McCarthy,
right.
I'd imagine.
Right.
So if the Vikings or the Broncos look around, I mean, the Vikings have Sam Darnold. I don't know, man. I know they got a second first-round draft choice, and that's to move up, but there's a lot of interest. Well, you know what? Instead of just wondering, let's ask somebody who's got maybe some better knowledge, because he just strolled around the NFL owners meeting for an entire week. Our friend Albert Breer from Sports Illustrated back here on the Rich Eisen Show. How are you doing, Albert?
I'm good. How you doing, Rich?
I'm doing great. What was the general consensus strolling around the owners' meeting about what's going to happen at the top of the draft in a month?
Yeah, I would say, I obviously everybody knows what's going to happen at number one. So Caleb Williams goes first. And, you know, there's some conflicting information out there on what the Commanders are going to do at two. I would say there's very little talk that they would trade out. So, like, one way or the other, I think it's going to be a quarterback. The name I continue to hear the most is Jaden Daniels. But again, I don't feel like I can say as strongly that it'll be Jaden Daniels as I can the Bears will be Caleb Williams. So, you know, I think it was you got 1-2 quarterback. And then I think the Patriots are in an interesting spot because the Bears at least know what they're looking at, and the Patriots don't yet. So let's say they like one of the top four or two of the top four quarterbacks, but not three, then would they entertain a trade out? You know, the Vikings have been linked to Drake May for obvious reasons. Josh McCown's on that staff. He coached Drake in high school. Drake played with his son in high school. So they've known each other going back a lot of years. If it went Jaden 2 and the Patriots were in love with Drake at 3, I think they would entertain a move out. Now, I don't know. They may be head over heels for Drake. It's possible. I still think the likelihood is they take a quarterback at 3. And to me, that's where things get interesting, because I think if the three teams at the top stick, then I think we probably get quarterbacks 1, 2, 3, 4 for the first time ever. I think if the Patriots trade out, maybe the urgency to get up to 4 dissipates a little bit, but I still think J.J. McCarthy would go somewhere within the top 6. So I don't think J.J. is going to fall very far, but, you know, I don't think it's a sure thing yet that quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3, 4. And who knows? I mean, maybe, you know, one of the, you know, a team at, you know, the Commanders, the Patriots, someone likes J.J. more than the other guys. I'm not there yet on that.
Because also, you know, the idea that Bob Kraft would say, I'm leaving it up to the decision makers. I'm a delegator. That's the way things go here in New England. But I really would love a young quarterback around here. You know, yeah. That's a thumb on the scale, isn't it? I mean, that's a big time.
Yeah,
thumb
I mean,
on
we
the
always
scale.
Know what it, we always know what it is, Rich. Like, you know what your boss wants, you know, and like sometimes it doesn't take them coming in the in the office and telling you exactly what to do when you do know. And the other thing that's sort of interesting about it is the guy who's heading up the personnel department and is ostensibly going to have, you know, authority over the third overall pick is a guy who doesn't know what his title is going to be after the draft, right? Is he going to be the general manager? Are they going to bring in somebody over the top of him? So, you know, if you're in a position where you want to please your boss and you want to become the general manager and you want everything that goes with that, you might be prone to lean towards what your boss wants. You know, so all that stuff can go into it. The Patriots have a lot of holes. And I've thought all along, the smart thing for them to do is to look at this and say, is there someone out there who will get us in the club? And by the club, I mean behind the velvet rope with Cincinnati, with Kansas City, with Baltimore, with Buffalo, with the Chargers, right, in the AFC. With that group of teams, there's just somebody who will get you inside of that club. And if the answer is yes, then you take them and you worry about the rest later. If you don't think that that person is there, well, you've got too many holes on your roster to support a flawed young quarterback, right? So I think at that point, you really have to consider the idea of moving out and maybe trying to take care of both the tackle and receiver positions in this year's draft. So they're in an interesting position just because I do think, you know, it's well known out there what the owner seems to want. And, you know, the guy who's the top personnel guy there isn't guaranteed of having anything past the draft. But the roster's got plenty of holes. And so it would take some cojones, I'd say, to not take a quarterback there. But Elliott's pretty principled, you know, and I think we all know he comes from good bloodlines and has great background having worked in that Packer organization. So, yeah, I wouldn't rule out him doing his own thing there either.
Plus, I mean, like, let's just say they fall in love with McCarthy, right? And May. Let's just say they love all four of them. They're like, we'll take four of them. And then they'll just maybe roll the dice and trade with the Giants, who might trade up for one of them, right? Because it just strikes me, the reason why I mentioned this, Albert, is because it strikes me, if you're New England, why would you move out down to 11? I don't think the Vikings are high enough yet. I feel like there needs to be one more leap for the Vikings to make prior to the draft for them to leap up in time for the draft. I kind of get that sense.
Let's say it's JJ, right? Like, let's say they love JJ. All right, so then do you potentially move down and back up like Arizona did last year? Like, you remember Arizona last year, you're sitting there on that stage and how Monty Austin-Fort and Jonathan Gannon maneuvered around the board, right? They started the night at 3. My understanding is they would have taken Paris Johnson, the offensive tackle from Ohio State there. They wind up trading down to 12 with Houston and then back up to 6. They pick up a ton of capital and they get Paris Johnson at 6, you know, in the end anyway. So do you try something like that? The problem is the risk is that you lose a player when you're doing that, you know? So you almost have to have it set up beforehand where it's like, okay, we're going to trade down to Minnesota and then we're going to have a deal in place with Arizona or the Chargers or the Giants or someone that puts us in front of the other quarterback needy teams. I mean, to me, there are four teams right now in the top 12 that I think have done their research that aren't in the top 3 on trading up, right? Those four teams are at 6, the Giants, at 7, the Raiders, at 11, the Vikings, and at 12, the Broncos. So if you are going to try maybe that trade down and back up scenario, you have to be leery about what all of those teams are going to do, which makes, I think, the way the quarterbacks come off the board really fascinating here. And the presence of J.J. McCarthy, you know, kind of like one of these real intriguing points of, you know, how the first 6 or 7 picks are going to go.
And then there's the question about the Broncos, right, is that they finally got draft capital back and clearly all conventional thought involving them is off the board. I mean, they've taken the largest dead cap hit in the history of caps and dead caps. And so that does actually defray what one would think is an advantage of having a rookie contract for your quarterback over the next couple of years. But it is also something that just, you know, it's a $30 million hit next year. All I'm saying is that the dead cap doesn't really foreclose the idea that they'll draft a rookie. The only question is stick and stay for Knicks or Penix or roll the dice and really use some capital to move up. What are you hearing about Denver's thought process a month away from the draft, Albert?
Well, we're all prisoners of our history to some degree, Rich, right? Like, we're all kind of products of what we've been through. And I wouldn't ignore what happened with Sean Payton in 2017. He loved Patrick Mahomes. That's not revisionist history. He really, really loved Patrick Mahomes. And they stuck at 11 thinking that he'd probably be there. Now, the Saints had an awesome draft that year, right? No question about it. Marshawn Lattimore was the 11th pick. Guy winds up becoming all pro. Ryan Ramczyk later in the first round. Marcus Williams, Alvin Kamara, Trey Hendrickson. Just an off-the-charts draft class that set them up to contend for 3 or 4 years thereafter. But if you don't think that hasn't stuck in Sean Payton's mind, how he got jumped by Andy Reid in that draft, right? And how they were sitting there one pick away from getting Patrick Mahomes. And how Andy Reid goes from 27 to 10 to get in front of him and take Mahomes and set the Chiefs up for the next 15 years. And what might have been if there had been a handoff from Brees and Mahomes, well, you know, I probably can't help you. If you can't wrap your head around how that would affect somebody, you know? So, I mean, I don't know if Sean's in love with one of these guys. But if he is, I would think that that history will mark how he handles this year's draft. In other words, don't take any chances. If there's a guy that you think is that guy that you have a chance to go and get, you do everything you can to go and get him. And I think that sort of puts them in a similar position to the Patriots, where I said, if there's somebody that you love, you go get them and you figure out the rest later. If not, then I think they've got enough holes in the roster now. And you look at the guys they've offloaded the last year and a half or so, Bradley Chubb, Jerry Judy, you know, Justin Simmons, some of those core pieces are gone now. Josie Jewell, who had been a really good linebacker for them for a few years. You look at some of the guys they've offloaded, and they really are in a rebuilding position. But again, if that quarterback that Sean really loves is there, I wouldn't rule out the idea of him going and getting aggressive to go and get him because of his experience in 2017.
Well, how aggressive do you think the Raiders are going to be? What do you think they're going to do? What are you hearing about that?
The connection you keep hearing there is them and Jaden Daniels, right? Like, and that they really love Jaden Daniels. Now, I mean, the obvious link is Antonio Pierce was with Jaden Daniels at Arizona State. For 3 years, I believe it was. So there's a lot of background there. The two guys know each other. Obviously, the Raiders, you know, are in a position where they need a quarterback. The question to me is whether or not, you know, they feel like they're in position to go give up draft capital to go and get one. And I'm not sure they feel that way. They have investigated it, and they've called around to gauge what it would cost to go up. I just don't know, Rich. I mean, like, remember, like, it was just 2 years ago, and I know Tom Telesco wasn't there yet, but it was just 2 years ago that they gave up first and second round picks to go and get Devontae Adams. And, you know, I think that that's left them in a position where they have a little less young talent on their roster because of it. And so I do think Tom Telesco comes in valuing the draft picks that he has. Doesn't mean if the opportunity to get Jaden comes along, they wouldn't go and take a big swing at it. But I think it's something to keep in mind as we move forward.
I mean, that would be expensive. I mean, again, all of these teams that are supposedly quarterback needy, and I use supposedly because the Vikings do have Sam Darnold there, maybe as a bridge or as a backup of if it does prove to be too expensive for them to move up, that they can figure out how to work with that. But from 11, 12, or 13 to get up to 2, 3, and 4, that's really pricey. At least the Vikings have another first-rounder in their back pocket from this year to help.
The Vikings, I mean, what I think is the most interesting thing about that is that trade. They had worked on that at the combine, the Vikings and the Texans had. That trade was contingent on the Vikings losing Kirk Cousins. So that trade doesn't happen unless they lose Kirk, which tells you their eyes are on trading up for a quarterback. And, you know, what's fascinating about the whole thing with teams like that, too, is this perception that you need to get past the Giants, right? Now, the Giants have done 30 visits with these guys. They brought in J.J. McCarthy and Drake May, like, the week after the combine, incredibly early to be doing 30 visits with these kids, right? They're going and they're going to work these kids out privately. And they had a massive crew at Michael Penix's pro day yesterday, right? So they're looking at all of these quarterbacks and they're doing the work as if they – as if they're going to take one, right? So is it they're ready to take one now where it would make sense because you've got Daniel Jones with 1 year of guaranteed money left. So you got the ability to redshirt whoever you draft now and then roll them out in 2025 and cut Daniel Jones after the season, right? Get out from underneath that contract. Is that what they're doing? Or are they looking at it and saying, we just want a better player to fall to us? And so, you know, there's this perception out there, whether it's the Raiders, the Vikings, the Broncos, that you have to get past six to get the fourth quarterback, right? Are the Giants creating all of that smoke so Marvin Harrison Jr. or Malik Nabers falls to them, right? I think it's a intriguing way of looking at all of this. And I can say this. I had some eyes in the ground in Seattle yesterday. Told me that the Giants spend a lot of time around Roma Dunze. I mean, maybe more so than they did Michael Penix. So, I mean, with Brian Daboll on the scene, with Joe Shane on the scene, it's just something to kind of file away that, like, at a pro day that had an elite quarterback and an elite receiver, they were choosing to spend a lot of time, at least in public view, with the receiver rather than the quarterback.
Well, that was interesting stuff right there from Albert Breer from Sports Illustrated. A couple things you just said over the last few minutes I want to pull on. Is Penix's draft stock falling right now, Albert?
So I don't think it's falling. There are a couple of things here. Number one, the medical is really important. And I think we all know that. And different teams are going to have different medical grades on him. One I talked to said the medical grade isn't great, but you can work with it, right? That's why the 40 time really helped him, because since he's had the injuries, he seemed a little bit more reluctant to run. But I think part of that is that he's evolving as a passer and becoming more comfortable as a passer. So he doesn't need to run as much. And running the 4.5, I think, some scouts had him at 4.53, 4.54, 4.56. He's right in that range. That's really good, right? So I think that was a big win for him yesterday. He showed off his arm strength too. Thing is, I'm just not sure the NFL en masse has been as high on Michael Penix as people on the outside have been. And I'm going to give you a story here from right before the championship game. So I made calls on McCarthy and Penix before the championship game, just trying to get a gauge of, you know, like, all right, like, what should we all be looking at as fans of the sport, as fans of the draft, when we watch these two kids on Monday night? And one thing that one of the executives I talked to said was, I view Michael Penix as a three-point shooter. He is as good as anybody we've seen the last few years throwing the deep ball. He's phenomenal throwing the deep ball, and he's got great arm strength, but he's scattershot underneath. And then I turn on the game on Monday night, Rich, on that Monday night, and I know you were watching and engaged. Mm-hmm. Michigan's defensive coordinator, Jesse Minter, at least it looked to me like he was daring him to throw underneath. And Penix didn't look the same. And so that sort of stuck in my head, because as I brought that three-point shooter analogy up with another scout and another scout, they all said, yeah, that's kind of it with him. He's a lot less consistent underneath. And that Michigan defense had the scheme and the horses to force him to throw it underneath, to take away the deep ball, to say, you got to beat us 5, 8, 10 yards at a time. And he couldn't quite do it. So that's just something that sort of sticks in my head. And I'm not saying he can't get past that, but remember, like, Bo Nix and Michael Penix are a little different, or Bo Nix, Michael Penix, and Jaden Daniels are a little different than McCarthy, May, and Williams, in that McCarthy, Williams, and May are all three-year guys, where the other three-year guys were 5 or 6 years in college. So there might be a little less growth potential with them. And it might be one of those where what you see is what you get. It's just an interesting kind of way of looking at it that this executive gave me. And, you know, sure enough, that night it sort of played out right in front of me and kind of brought to life why some NFL teams have some doubts on him.
And then there's the conversation about the wide receiver group, three of them in the top 10. I mean, the question is where does Adunze, could he even last to the Bears at 9? I know Bears fans are dreaming of him winding up there at 9. Malik Nabers had a heck of a pro day, and it's asked and answered here how, you know, Marvin Harrison Jr. pretty much let everyone at the combine know, or even asked permission to not work out at the pro day of the teams that were interested in him. And I even heard that he told scouts at last year's pro day, where he did work out with CJ Stroud, get a good look in, essentially, because I'm not doing this next year as far as I'm concerned. And then there's, but still, that lingers as a question as to whether Nabers could potentially leapfrog him and be the first wide receiver taken in the draft. What are you hearing, Albert?
Yeah, I don't think that's likely. I don't think it's impossible, though. They're different, you know, like, they're just different types of players. I think people are reading this the wrong way. I don't think Harrison's falling. I don't think there's a problem there as much as I think Nabers has really sort of proven himself to be in that class. And, you know, where I struggled a little bit with this was, you know, it feels like some of it is, it's like with Caleb Williams and Drake May, right? Those guys have been on the radar for so long that we've built them up for so long that all that's left to do is tear them down. And I feel like the same sort of thing was happening with Marvin. But the more I've talked with teams, it's a little bit different for them. It's Marvin Harrison is still perhaps the best receiver prospect to come along since 2011 or even 2007 with Calvin Johnson, right? What this is with Malik Nabers is more, maybe we have A.J. Green and Julio Jones in this year's class, right? Like, you think back to 2011, and that's been the sort of reference point with Marvin. He's the best since 2011.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you remember there were two guys that year that were that good. And I think that that's what's happening with Malik Nabers now. And, like, teams are looking at him and as, yeah, this is like a once every few years type of guy, the same way Marvin is, you know? So I think that's more of what's happened over the last few weeks. And they're very different styles of receiver. And I think one thing that's interesting about it is where Marvin has created that opening, right? Like in saying, like, I'm preparing for my rookie year, right? Which I think that whatever team that gets him is going to be so happy with that because he's going to be in football shape and ready to play the sport rather than run a 40. So it makes sense logically that he's doing it that way. Malik Nabers has really taken that on as a challenge. And I know teams that have met with him have said, like, he really views this as, like, I'm taking this as a competition and I'm going to show everyone how good I am. And I'm going to show everyone that you are not missing out if you take me over Marvin Harrison. So it's sort of interesting that way.
Mm, I love it. And, of course, we're going to put a pin in this whole long conversation and revisit it in a couple of weeks and see how things might have changed or solidified. Before I let you go, I'm going to give you just the broad platform here to lay out there for us what you heard at the owner's meeting or saw at the owner's meeting that stuck with you, that few people are talking about, that you're willing to share. You always have something interesting, a nugget where you heard or you thought or it confirms or anything like that. I'll give you the floor.
Yeah, somebody asked me that earlier today, and I used the Nabers thing with them.
Oh,
so,
boy, okay. All right.
You got it out of me, Rich. You're
I
good
got
at
it
your
out
job.
Of you anyway. Could be part of the rules, could be part of anything. The Steelers going, you know, Omar Khan saying, you know, if you told me at the combine I'd have this quarterback room now, I'd be, you know, surprised. I don't know. Just throw it out there.
Here's one for you. Okay. You know, I think the rising price of quarterbacks, right, and where you're seeing Joe Burrow go now and Justin Herbert go now and Jalen Hurts go now, I had more discussions with people about the idea of churning that position than ever before. And I think part of it is you see some of the guys who are going to get paid, like Brock Purdy, for example, has had an unbelievable start to his career. Do you pay him $55 million a year? Or do you have the stomach to churn that position, right? Like, I think the Packers are going to pay Jordan Love, but would you consider churning that position? I think that discussion first came up for me, Rich, I would say 12 years ago, right? When after the Seahawks had drafted Russell Wilson, well, less than 12 years ago, he was drafted 12 years ago. So it would have been 7 or 8 years ago, but it was like when they were first looking at paying Russell Wilson and they had all of those mouths to feed, right? Like Richard Sherman and Earl Thomas and Bobby Wagner and Cam Chancellor. And I don't need to go down all the names of all the Hall of Fame types that were in that building. Right. And like, there was this whole thing, like, could John Schneider, who came from Green Bay, where Ron Wolf would draft a quarterback every year and had Matt Hasselbeck and Mark Brunell and Aaron Brooks and all those guys behind Brett Favre for all those years, would John Schneider be the guy that would say, nope, I'm keeping everybody else. I'm going to draft another quarterback and we're going to maybe tag Russell Wilson for a year and then let him go. Ultimately, the Seahawks didn't wind up doing it, but I know there was that thought out there that they could. Does someone do it now? And it's, look, Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, Josh Allen, those guys, I'm not talking about those guys, right?
No.
Those guys will always get the money. But after a year in which Daniel Jones got $40 million a year and Baker Mayfield completely outplayed him at $10 million per, does there come a time when a team just says, you know what, we're going to find a way to just turn this position and we're going to turn it over year to year? That discussion I heard from, like, I'm just talking about like discussions I had casually out at night and that sort of thing. That discussion you're hearing more and more now. So I don't know that we're on the doorstep of that starting to happen. And again, it won't affect the super elite. Mahomes, Burrow, Allen, all those guys are going to get theirs at the highest level. The question is, if you have a guy that's a little less than that, are you comfortable paying him at that level, or are you better off going back into the draft to find one so you constantly have that rookie contract advantage with your quarterback?
Bert, we've been talking about that for years here, and you know the team that we identified that would maybe do that first, again, treat the quarterback position like running back, wide receiver. Yeah. Why are we paying that when we could just go in the draft and draft another one? It's just such a crapshoot at quarterback and so important in terms of the position. Boy, is that a risk. So you need to have a coach with tenure. You need to have a general manager with tenure and an owner who believes in both. And we always identified the Ravens as being that team because of that. But, you know, Lamar proved to be a velvet rope type quarterback, right, that you pay. That's the guy that we take them out. And so you're identifying maybe San Francisco being that one. You never know. No, I know. And you're just speculating. How about this one? How about this one? And then I'll let you go. And I appreciate you giving us all this time with your family, waiting for you to join them for Easter weekend. So listen, how about this one? How about Dallas? Because the GM is the owner. And now you've got Dak on a prove it deal now? Like, what the hell is going on there? What about that is churning?
If you're Dallas, the position? I mean, if you're Dallas, well, and remember, Dallas got to pay CeeDee Lamb. They've got to pay Micah Parsons, right? How much is Micah Parsons going to cost? You know,
a lot.
Like, so, so I mean, it is a thought. Like, and Minnesota got to that point, right? Like, where it was, they love Kirk. Like, Kevin O'Connell loves Kirk Cousins and would have him back in a second if all things were equal. But they got to the point where it's like, we can't do this anymore, where we're playing this game where the price keeps rising and you're fully guaranteed every year. Like, we can't keep doing this. It's like, you know, we have to break the cycle at some point. Is Dallas at that point? Could Dallas consider, again, like, say they like Michael Penix more than some other teams. Could they consider Michael Penix at the end of the first round? You know, I think these discussions are interesting ones to have because, you know, especially with a team like, you know, against the Cowboys, right? They haven't been to the NFC title game. Forget winning a Super Bowl. They haven't been to the NFC title game since, what is it, 1995?
Mm-hmm.
And they have been paying at the top of the market at quarterback. Now, I'm not saying Dak's not a good player. He's a really good player. But does there come a point where you have to change the model? You know, that is one that's worth watching. And I can't help but think, you know, it's so funny. We talked about Minnesota, right? One thing that I brought up with the Minnesota people, and I've talked to them over the last few weeks about Sam Darnold, is how I think I saw a little something. You remember that Monday night, the Christmas night game between the Ravens and Niners, and the Ravens blew them off the field, right? If you were watching the end of that game, the last 10 minutes, I think I saw a different Sam Darnold. Now, I don't know. I'm not a coach. I'm not a scout. But that dude looked like he was playing a different game than he had previously. It looked like he was playing faster, right?
Sure. And in this day and age, Albert, you know, where you just mentioned Mayfield outplayed, you know, Daniel Jones last year. Honestly, why can't Sam Darnold be the second, the new version of Mayfield? Baker. You know what I mean? Like, right, with a new spot.
He's younger than him. You know,
he
that,
was drafted right,
right
behind him. Same damn draft, you know? So why not? And in the same way, also, though, as and he's from the organization where there's Purdy, and you're wondering if there's any churn at the position somewhere, and would the Niners dare to do that with Purdy? You know, the Niners churning the position, one of the backups to Dak is Trey Lance. So he's sitting there, and the Cowboys have them in his in the back pocket, you know?
I got a good story on that one for you. Like, so I remember being with Gino, right? Or being with Gino in Seattle after last summer. I spent a good amount of time talking to him, and then, you know, and that was before practice, and we kind of gone through his story and how much he learned when he sat and all of that, like, and how humbling it was for him and everything else. And I was with one of his coaches walking off the field that afternoon. And this coach said to me, coaching Geno has made me wonder how many more Genos there are out there. How many more guys there are who always had talent, who were thrown out there too early on bad teams, who got knocked around, who were forced to sit down for 4 or 5 years, who still have that talent where no one knows it because everybody's given up on them. But they've learned so much sitting for a few years. And they've learned so much from the experience of having gone through that. And it did, that really made me think. You know what I mean? Like, it's, you think of all the guys and how the league chews up these guys and spits them out. And how many guys are thrown into bad circumstances or play too early because the job, the coach's job's on the line, whatever it is, you know? And like, how many guys are there out there like that? And the Bucs sort of found one in Baker Mayfield. And now maybe the Vikings have found one in Sam Darnold. I don't know. I mean, I think they're still going to draft one, but, you know, I maybe they have something there in Sam, you know? And the thing is, like, they have him on a one-year deal at $10 million. Everybody knows it's going to get a hell of a lot more expensive if he plays really well. So there's just a lot of dynamics at work at that with that. And, you know, I do think, like, with the rate at which the league is chewing up and spitting out talented young quarterbacks who are drafted in the first round or two, there's got to be more opportunity, like the one Seattle found, like the one maybe Minnesota finds, like the one Tampa found. There's got to be more opportunities like there out there, like that out there.
Bert, you're the best, man. Thanks again. Apologize to your family for me keeping you. Have a great Easter weekend. Good. You be well, pal.
Awesome.
Okay.
Thanks, guys.
That's
have a great
Albert.
Weekend.
Boy, that's Albert. Awesome. That's awesome. All right, we'll take a break. There's one thing I want to hit, and then we'll come back. Then we'll also do what's more likely before the end of the hour.
Boom.
Oh, boy. We're going to have a fun conversation when we come back before what's more likely.
If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. With Indeed, everything hiring is all in one place, and it makes it so easy. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences each day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. The more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join the more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Indeed.com/podcast. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Named one of the best personal finance podcasts, The Stacking Benjamin Show with Joe and his friends makes financial literacy fun.
I got an email today from the LenPenzo.com HR department. I find it really interesting. I'm an employee of one at this company, but somebody from the HR department sent me an email telling me that I had a raise. If I just opened the attachment, I could see how much my raise was.
Make sure you click on the links that are in there, too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I can't wait. I'm excited.
Find out more by searching the Stacking Benjamins podcast wherever you listen.
One of my favorite guests, and I'm not just saying that because you're sitting right here.
I think you are.
I am.
What are you on, steroids or something?
I am actually on steroids, Bryan Cranston. Last Flag Flying in select theaters now.
We're going to have to disqualify this show because of your steroid use.
You know what? I thought about that before taking that steroid.
Now, wouldn't it be disheartening if you took the steroid and you had the best show ever? Then you'd go, oh, my God, oh, I have to take more steroids. How can you go off the steroids?
Since you and I last spoke here on this show, your Dodgers went to the World Series.
There was that five-hour game that went in. That was insane.
It was insane. I am proud to say I stuck around extra innings for that night. I did see some people in this town, people that you would know, people that we have all seen on television. Look,
call them out.
I can't do it.
Do it.
I can't.
You're on steroids. What the hell do you care?
I do have that as a fallback position, do I not? But I would never do that to you.
It is. Your Honor, I was on steroids at the time when I made that comment.
When somebody from Arrested Development got up.
Yes.
But,
Jason Bateman.
No,
you've been had. In your face, Jason.
There's a lot of people.
I'm disappointed, Jason.
And Will Arnett.
Wow. But it wasn't.
It just amazes me seeing in Breaking and in Better Call Saul the number of characters whose demise eventually is met because of your character.
Ooh, me?
I know exactly. It is remarkable.
I unfortunately have that association. If I spend any amount of time with someone, they end up dying surprisingly. Mm-hmm. So I would suggest you get life insurance. you know, you want to protect your family.
Yeah, everything you do that. Okay.
Sorry.
Oh, all of Bryan Cranston's appearances. I love that man back on the Rich Eisen Show. You can check everything out that you miss on YouTube.com/Rich Eisen Show. I just saw a clip from a 2017 show when Bryan Cranston might have been his first appearance on the show. He was just delightful. And we're back on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network, sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk, furnished by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com. Or just stop by. Man, I love chatting ball with Albert, where he just hears so much, and he's so good at taking it in and then disseminating it with a viewpoint and a little bit of opinion and a lot of fact, and just makes you think. And for those of you who might be just tuning in right now or maybe seeing this later on our collection page on Roku, part of our video on demand service, or our YouTube page, youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show. Albert, I asked him, what did you hear at the owners meeting? What are you talking about? And what are you hearing? And he basically said all the kind of what we've been talking about is that at some point, will a team, instead of paying a quarterback what the market price is, $40 million, $45 million, like the Giants paid Daniel Jones, and you're still you know, wondering if he's the guy or not, will somebody just say, I know we used you a high draft position on you at some point, but we're going back in the draft. We're going to draft another one, just like they do at a running back, just like the Giants just did with Saquon Barkley. We'll send you somewhere else. Someone else can pay you, but we're going to go back into the draft pool for running back, for cornerbacks, you know, for wide receivers. Will somebody ever treat the quarterback position like that? We still haven't seen it yet, right?
Not yet. But I think we're getting closer, though.
We are, because you're seeing the churning, as Albert said, churning the quarterbacks, taking kids from the draft, chewing them up, and spitting them out.
Yeah.
And we're seeing just, again, where Baker Mayfield has now come back around. The Bucs have now paid him. He performed better than the guy who got the market deal in Daniel Jones.
But that's his fourth team.
Understood. Geno Smith, he said, Albert, that he spoke to a coach from Seattle who said, having coached Geno, I'm wondering how many more Genos are out there, sat for years, and still is talented. Now look at him. Now, Baker didn't sit for years. He just played for a couple other teams for, what, 2 or 3 years. Sam Darnold, a couple other teams for 2 or 3 years. Now he is in the opportunity to be in the Mayfield position if the Vikings use him all year long.
Fourth team.
Right? And he's what's drafted 2 picks after Baker.
Only 26.
And Saquon, the guy who has been now officially churned, in between Baker and him.
Yep.
So my question for you is, now that we're seeing in 2021, the second overall pick, the third overall pick, the 11th overall pick, the 15th overall pick, in Zach, Trey, Justin Fields, and Mac Jones, they are all elsewhere, with Zach waiting to be elsewhere. Which one of these four guys, Zach, Trey, yeah, Justin, or Mac,
the new Baker,
could eventually be,
yeah,
getting the opportunity? Who is the best opportunity, skill set, to potentially do that? Justin. Now, I think you're saying Justin Fields, right? Everybody's saying so. That right now.
I weirdly think it's Zach Wilson.
Really? I can't shake that feeling too, really? Chris.
Yeah.
You guys still think about to that one throw he made on his pro day?
No, I'm thinking about the game against the Chiefs last year. I'm thinking about late in the year last year when he had to get back out there. Like, he shows that it's in there somewhere.
I can't shake that, too.
But
it's
he
amazing
needs the right environment.
That.
The Jets are not the right environment for young quarterbacks. They never have been. He needs a Kyle Shanahan, a Kevin O'Connell, a Cliff Kingsbury.
Well, Mac Jones is in that spot now, pal.
But is Mac going to play ever?
I don't know.
It doesn't seem like it unless Trevor Lawrence gets injured.
I don't know, but he's going to get the hug he needs. He's going to get the coaching that he's been really wanting, like a coach with a smile on his face, sitting right down next to him and just chit-chatting with him and saying, "What's inside of you, son?"
I think so. I think he will down there, but it's going to be all second team reps.
And Trey Lance, just we haven't heard from him.
We have no idea if he can play. We have none.
But all four of them are going to, it's going to come back around, man. I feel it. But it's amazing you said Zach, because I was going to say that too.
Yeah.
I can feel it.
I can feel it.
So you say Justin.
I think Justin, yeah.
Because he's the one that seems to have this very year the opportunity more than anybody else.
And he seemed the most advanced out of all
with
those,
all due respect to Russ.
Outside of Trevor, obviously.
I'm still worried about
Zach's gotten a lot of trouble, got a lot of run, man.
I'm worried about Justin Fields being able to protect himself. And it's like an RG3 situation where it's there, we see it, the potential, and he just gets injured because he's unwilling to take the necessary steps to protect his body.
Well, that coaching obviously will play a big part in that, and is having
he's
a
in a great spot.
Line.
Yeah, obviously,
but
he's in a great coaching.
The reason
spot.
Why you just said for you can't shake that it's Zach.
Yeah.
Is the reason why that
too much time together?
Well, that's probably true.
No, it's just the reason why is the reason why the Jets haven't traded him yet, because you look at what Fields was traded for, Mac Jones was traded for, what Trey Lance was traded for, the Jets.
We're not going to get anything.
Not going to get any
value in
like
return.
A seventh round pick swap in 2028.
Stupid.
You know what I mean? Like
just
that's
hold
what,
on to him.
That's what they're going to do. I think he's going to be like the best third string quarterback, and I feel for him. That's what Woody Johnson even said that the other day. Like I feel for Zach.
Yeah.
You know, and knowing the way the things work in the NFL, he might get some starts this year because Tyrod Taylor will get hurt after Rodgers gets hurt. It's Zach time.
But I mean, that makes sense, Rich, because if you look back,
chat, man.
Tyrod Taylor, every time he gets hurt, it ushers in the new era of quarterback for his last few ball clubs. Sure, so right, maybe, right. You know.
Also, that Zach is in a good spot this year, even more so than last year, because there's not even pressure on him to be the backup. He is, if he's still on the Jets, he's the third guy.
I hope he's not still on the Jets. He deserves to be set free.
He does. I agree with that.
And somewhere...
There's no way they bring him back, Rich. He can't.
I don't know. Woody Johnson made it seem like he's not going anywhere.
They're not just going to cut him. They're not going to just cut their second overall pick from 2021. They're just not going to do that.
They're doing him a disservice then.
I don't know. Or he gets to learn next to Rodgers and Tyrod Taylor. And,
yeah, maybe. I mean.
And then he's free.
Like a
bird. Then he's free.
Because they're not picking up his fifth year.
That's obviously. Definitely not happening. Correct.
A.A. Ron. Here, Coach.
We haven't heard from him in a while.
Wow, well,
are you complaining about that?
No, I'm just pointing, making an observation.
How about? I mean, great conversation, guys. All right, we will take a break. Here's what we're gonna do. Do we have my power rankings all set and ready to go?
Power.
Okay,
rankings.
Let's do that next. My power rankings of the best moments of opening day.
Okay.
Of baseball on Thursday, and. Then we've got What's More Likely in hour number three. And then the comedian Alex Edelman will be here in studio. We'll have a fun conversation with him and send you on the rest of your weekend. That's next. This is The Rich Eisen Show.
Welcome to Talkville,
the ultimate Smallville rewatch podcast. Title Transference aired October 27, 2004. Director James Marshall, writers Todd Slavkin, Darren Swimmer. I really like this episode, and I'm surprised that you don't like it as much as you thought you did.
I actually respect your opinion more than I respect my own in general. When you say things are good and I check them out, they are.
Jump in now or catch up on any of the past seasons of Talkville on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Hi there. Sorry for the interruption, but are you enjoying this show on Google Podcasts? You should know that the Google Podcasts app is going away this spring. That's right, going away, gone as in no longer available. You can still enjoy this show elsewhere, though. Try out Spotify or Amazon Music, or maybe TuneIn is more your style. Whatever app you switch to, be sure to follow so you never miss the next episode. And thanks for listening, wherever you listen.
Okay, so I'm going to do some power rankings with baseball.
It was a fun opening day, man.
Oh, it was indeed. We'll wait till the radio audience returns fully. Do we have baseball music that we can play? What do you think, Jay? What do you have?
Working on it.
What was Del Tufo got anything proper? Like, let's hold on a minute.
It's not. I need labeled, hold on a minute.
Is it,
proper,
is it proper? Is it properly labeled?
No.
What does
no.
he have?
I don't have anything. From him, baseball.
I mean, we don't have to have music.
You're doing some searching?
Yeah.
No, I don't have to do that on the fly. I mean, also just want to make sure that it's...
just like clearable.
Yeah, that's... You know what I mean?
Yeah, we don't want to get popped.
Just play some of the stuff we have, Jay.
What do you got? All right. Well, just play it.
It's old school stuff.
We'll use our Roku channel platform for spitballing. What do you got? Well, it sounds like... That's good.
You liked the organ yesterday, Rich.
Yeah, so. I like the organs.
Yeah. It's like baseball sound effects and stuff.
That sounds like that Zen commercial on on the MLB League Pass or whatever they got at the at bat.
All right. I like that kind of.
Okay.
It's generic crowd noise and some organs.
All right.
Okay, cool.
As long as the generic crowd noise doesn't. What was with that fan rooting for Grand Canyon the other night? Did you hear that?
Oh, yeah. That happens like once a year where there's somebody is sitting next to the mic and they're just screaming their head off.
Would be horrible if this came on.
But by the way, that would be your last job. Your job to go up to him and say, "Will you stop screeching?"
Yeah.
Because somebody thinks a crime's being committed here. You know?
Was it DeMar DeRozan's daughter that the one?
Oh, yeah. A couple years ago? Got him a win, right?
Yeah.
Got him a dub.
And then didn't take her on the road, and they lost the next series.
That's right.
Well, she needs to be educated. She can't be pulled out of school.
She would have had a far greater education, Rich.
Come on now. All right, back on the Rich Eisen show. I've got power rankings, and they're power rankings for Major League Baseball. My power rankings for the best moments of opening day 2024. Hit it, please. Hit it. Hit it.
There are many like it, but this one is mine.
Power rankings.
We're making a power rankings out of Major League Baseball's best moments from opening day because there were a lot of them.
There were a lot. It was fun.
There were absolutely a lot of them.
Back.
Okay, number 10. Here we go. I like the background music, a little organist.
I'm worried. But
number 10, Bieber's the best. Shane Bieber with one of the best performances on opening day. Certainly with giving up no runs. Shane Bieber going into Oakland, where the fans were protesting outside. And 6 innings, 4 hits, 1 walk, 11 strikeouts, 5th opening day start gave new manager Stephen Vogt a W. So Bieber is number 10 on the list. Number 9 on the list, the first home run of opening day 2024 was hit by Mike Trout.
Hey.
And the Angels still lost. Stop me if you've heard this one before.
It was a bomb.
As a matter of fact, by the way, it was the only base runner allowed by Corbin Burns in his Oriole debut. And he joined only one other pitcher. He's given up no walks and one or fewer runs on opening day while striking out 11. Burns struck out 11, too.
Jeez.
The only other pitcher to do that since 1967, Bob Gibson.
Heard of him.
How about that? All right, number 8 on the list. Here we are, my power rankings, top moments from baseball's opening day. The Vlad bomb went off in Tampa. God. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. in the 6th inning hit one 450 feet over the hitter's eye in left center field.
So far.
And when after the game, somebody asked him, told him it was 450 feet. He said he thought it was longer.
I mean, he might lead the league in home runs.
And he might not
be
wrong. George Springer and Kevin Biggio also homered in the Blue Jays opening day win. Number 7 on this list, the Los Angeles Dodgers reached into their bag of famous fans, and opening day the lineup was read off by none other than Bryan Cranston. How about that?
It was pretty awesome. He came out, hat, mustache, Dodger blue shirt, did the lineup 1 through 9.
Fantastic.
That's pretty cool.
What a life he's living right now. Cool. Walter White greets new Dodger blue is number 7 on the list. Number 6 on the list is Mr. Opening Day himself. How about your Boston Red Sox favorite? Mr. O'Neill is going to town once again.
Yes.
How about that? Tyler O'Neill. He had home runs in his last 4 opening days with St. Louis, which tied the all-time record. And yesterday he homered in the opening day appearance as a Boston Red Sox. By the way, in Seattle against the team that drafted him in the stadium he used to go as a kid because he's from British Columbia.
So cool.
And he's now set the record. Do you know who he broke the tie with?
Yeah, it was 3 other guys, right?
I got it for you.
Yogi Berra was one of them.
Gary Carter.
Yeah.
And Todd Hundley, baby.
Yeah. Okay.
There you go.
Great.
All right. Number 5 on the list. The Rangers raise their first ever World Series banner and win in walk-off style. And the guy who did it was Jonah Heim, who a couple of innings before had some sort of a brain fart behind home plate, thought it was a tip ball. Right. Instead, it was a swing and a miss. Strike three, ball gets past him, and he's looking at the umpire saying, is it a tip ball or not, while the Cubs runner scores from second. And that helped tie the and help give the Cubs actually a go-ahead lead, run.
Yeah.
They tied the game in the ninth, and then the guy who had the brain fart behind home plate walked off the Cubs as the Rangers are now 1-0. Number four on the list. This one's for me, people. Soto says no. Juan Soto, who's already had a 1-for-3 day with a run batted in and two walks, is sitting there in right field, and he's supposed to be the weak link in that outfield. And it is a game-tying base hit that is hit by Kyle Tucker. Mauricio Dubon is coming around to score to tie the game, and Soto, with a one-hop 87.6-mile-an-hour throw from right field, pegged them out to keep the lead, and the Yankees went on to win. How about that? Number three on the list, in the bottom of the sixth inning, up 2-1 with a runner in scoring position, Fernando Tatis is in scoring position, and Manny Machado pops out to second base, and in his frustration, tries to snap the bat over his leg like he's Bo Jackson, and cannot snap the bat.
Machado is no Bo.
The video of this is amazing.
I mean, by the way, is that going to leave a mark on his right thigh or what?
He might have a bruise.
Machado is no Bo is number three on the list, and then number two on the list is the Martini Happy Hour. How about this in Cincinnati? 33-year-old Nick Martini, batting eighth, is a designated hitter. In his first opening day start, hits a two-run home run in his first at-bat. And in the next inning with two on, does this.
Martini to right center. A two-home run day. The Reds order a Martini, and they make it a double. His second career.
John Sadak already in postseason form as the Reds announcer. And by the way, apparently it happened, by the way, on the real time at 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
That's amazing.
Ordered a double martini at 5 in the afternoon.
It's 5 o'clock
somewhere, people. And then number one on my power rankings of top moments from opening day 2024 is how about a 14th spot for the Diamondbacks in the third inning last night. The NL, reigning NL champs, taking on the Colorado Rockies, batted around twice, 18 batters, 13 hits, two walks, and a sacrifice fly, 34-minute-long inning. It's the most runs scored in a single frame since 1900, and how about this? No home runs. Zero home runs. Zach Gallen was the one who was enjoying that that largesse from his offense. And after the game, he's like, next time they do that, can you do it in just 10 minutes? See, if you want to get back out there again. Over a half an hour.
Love it.
And that's my power rankings. Baseball is back.
Yeah. Great opening day.
Was awesome. Coming up in hour number three, a former Red Sox employee, by the way, comedian Alex Edelman in studio.
I mean, well, we're back on. We're going 162-0, so.
Okay. So are the Yankees.
Yeah.
Well, we can't because we play each other, although not 18 times anymore, right?
That's kind of dumb.
Isn't that the way it works now?
Yeah.
The new schedule's in effect?
Yeah, the new schedule because you play everybody kind of evenly now.
Are you going to enjoy your one-year rental with Juan Soto before he comes to the other side of town?
Listen, Met
He's
fan.
He's getting a $600 million
I almost
deal.
Put on this list one of the top 10 moments is the Mets got rained out, so we didn't have to watch them.
Oh, we're on right now, guy, okay?
And, okay, guy. Guy.
You got an hour.
It's an hour. By the way, you know what's going to really piss fans off now, just to kind of counterbalance it? The new rule change in baseball, it's going to really piss some fans off, is you can't block second base if somebody's stealing.
Well,
you can't block the base.
The Lindor one from
spring training
was just like, what are we doing?
The throw beat the runner by a foot.
And he's just like waiting.
And he's safe because the runner was safe because Lindor was blocking the base with his knee.
That's stupid.
You are not allowed to block a base if you're the catcher at home or anybody to block a base when somebody's stealing.
But you couldn't do the catch one for a while. That was the Buster Posey
Correct.
Rule.
Yeah.
But
this is a new rule.
The base one is new.
Somebody's going to steal a base and someone's going to be way out. And he's going to be ruled safe because the shortstop or second baseman is blocking the base.
Get out of here.
I mean, that's ridiculous.
That's
gave
coming.
Your bases and they can't block it now?
That's correct. That's going to happen.
Okay.
So get ready.
It's probably going to happen to us this game.
Are you winning?
Well, it's bottom of the first. Hey. Brady Nimmo's up. We lost their no-hitter in the first, so there's that.
Okay.
Okay. Let's go, Mets.
Okay.
What's more likely in the comedian Alex Edelman and you, hour three?
Movies, TV shows, books, podcasts, and more. It's What Women Binge with Melissa Joan Hart and her friend Amanda Lee.
We have Lauren Bosworth with us.
Yay!
The Hills. So what is like your number one question from fans?
The primary question I still get asked was, "What is it real?" In 2024, to me, is a surprising question to get because I feel like everybody has been through the reality TV gauntlet at this point.
What Women Binge, wherever you listen.